I remember this because when the show was over, I didn't know what to do with the egg. I took my props and I put it in my desk, and I remember my teacher's teaching and the room smells so bad and I was so embarrassed. I didn't know what to do.
I think that is a common thing amongst magicians, of we produce something and then what do you do with it? My kid just performed their first solo magic show. In front of 300 of their peers, they correctly predicted a randomly selected TV show, vanished a bottle of Coke, and tricked the principal into opening a can of spring snakes in his face. Classic comedy right there. But why do so many kids, particularly girls, give up on magic? Amy Kimlout is a children's author and former kid magician whose new picture book, Hocus Pocus, Practice Focus, inspires kids to stick with their passions no matter how hard it gets. I talked to Amy about performing magic as a kid, girls in magic, and being a first-time author. Amy even provides a link to a free copy of the book for listeners of this podcast. And if you do enjoy the podcast, head to iTunes and leave a review. The more reviews I get, the more listeners join our community, and the more episodes I can produce. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson, and this is Scammapalooza. I noticed that you are a former magician and children's. Is that right? You're a former magician? You've hung up your magic hat and wand?
I'm a current children's author, and I'm a former kid magician. I won't say that I'll never perform magic again, but I'll never perform magic as a kid again. So that's definitely the case.
Of course, you're a former kid magician. I thought a former magician for kids. And I was like, what?
No.
There was some sort of thing about I love magic, but I can never perform again. That makes much more sense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely was performing for kids, but they were my friends. So yeah, I was very much into magic when I was a kid, and I performed a magic show for my third grade class. And then I again performed a magic show for my eighth grade class. And then after that, that was, the show that I performed for my eighth grade class did not go quite as I had hoped. So after that, I hung up my hat, as you say, and that was the end of my magic career as a child.
As a child, yes, got it. Because you may be a magician again, but sadly, like all of us, you will never be a child again.
Right.
very somber start there to the chat. So what got you into magic as a kid? Do you remember? Was there like a magician you saw or something happened that got you into magic?
I think like many kids, I saw magic on TV. I saw World's Greatest Magic and watched all of those, and I just thought it was really cool. I remember once I got to middle school seeing David Blaine's TV specials and really wanting to know how everything was done. And yeah, I think it's very common for kids to go through that magic phase. And I happened to go through a couple of those phases when I was a kid.
You mentioned you did a show in grade three. Do you remember that show?
Yeah, I do remember some things about it. I remember that I had my friend Kristen sit in a chair, and I told her that she needed to figure out a way to stand up. And I pressed my finger against her forehead and pretended I had all of the strength, and she couldn't get up. So I remember that. And I don't remember the actual other tricks that I did, but I do remember that there was something involving a hard-boiled egg. And I remember this because when the show was over, I didn't know what to do with the egg. I took my props and I put it in my desk. And I remember my teacher's teaching and the room smells so bad. And I was so embarrassed. I didn't know what to do. And I took the egg to the bathroom and I threw it in the trash can in the bathroom. And then I felt terrible about that I had like somehow ruined the bathroom because now the bathroom smells terrible. So that's all I remember from my third grade magic show.
I think that is a common thing amongst magicians, of we produce something and then we have to put
what do you
that,
do with it?
What do you do right. with it? And just, I heard recently about a magician who was performing with doves, but they weren't trained. And so they would like fly around, and then after the show just has to wander around and figure out where their doves are. We have those long conversations about milk. Like, well, I want to use milk, but milk is disgusting, and how can I use milk and not use milk? So this is
right. Yeah, the books don't usually say how to clean up your show.
No, after the show, have a little plastic container to put the egg in so you don't stink up the classroom.
Yeah, I wish I had thought about that. That was not something I was thinking about.
But then you mentioned it, you had another show in middle school, which is what age?
Yes.
Because I'm in Australia, and we don't have middle school. What age is middle school here?
This was eighth grade, so I think I was 13 at the time.
13, okay. So sort of, okay, great. Okay.
Yeah, we had to, for this project, we had to select any topic and research it for the whole year. So it was a very big deal. And I selected magic. And so I spent the whole school year researching it and learning everything I could and different techniques and types of effects and history and different magicians. And then you had to deliver a 40-minute presentation on your topic and write a research paper. And so I, of course, did a magic show as a part of this presentation. And it did not go quite as planned. I did a cups and balls routine. Mm-hmm. And to expose the cups and balls routine a little bit, you know, there's supposed to be a hidden ball. And my hidden ball became not hidden. And it just rolled right across the table. And I was so embarrassed. And I'm sure, was not a big deal at all. And I'm sure no one even really realized that something had gone wrong. But I didn't know that it was acceptable for things to go wrong in magic shows. And this was just a part of being a magician. And I thought, okay, well, I guess magic's not for me. And then I didn't get the grade I hoped for on the project. I still did fine, but not as well as I had hoped. So after that, I just thought, okay, well, I better pick a different hobby because I must not be cut out for this. But really, I just needed more practice.
Yeah, that's right. But at the age of 13, that is exactly the reaction that you have to things when you're 13. Every minor inconvenience or tiny little thing that goes wrong is the greatest tragedy, and your life is ruined forever. And it's only years later that we realize, oh, wait, no one cares.
Yeah, I think that a tendency to think that you should just naturally be good at things and just quit, I think that's something that can be that develops very young. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote this picture book. It's called Hocus Pocus Practice Focus. And it's about a young girl who wants to be a magician. And she discovers that it's not quite as easy as she thought. And she learns about all of the practice and focus that goes into becoming successful at it. And I think that the message is really well suited for very young children, which is why I put the message into a picture book, because I think that's the age when you can really shape the way kids perceive things. And when they're really little, I mean, I'm talking 3, 4, 5 years old, that's when you can really explain to them that, like, it's okay to make mistakes and it's okay for things to not go as planned and to just keep going, because I think very small children are much more accepting of these kinds of life lessons. And then it can just be a part of the way they look at the world, so that when they do get to middle school, it's not such a shock when things don't go the way they wanted.
Yeah. I mean, I have a 5-year-old who is, we've spent, you know, half a decade now trying to instill that growth mindset, that idea of mistakes are not just okay and forgivable, but necessary, and a sign that you're learning and growing. And if you're making zero mistakes in life, then you're not growing and changing. Right. And that she does not believe us. She does not. She thinks it's a lie. And she
really,
I was going to just show her the book, but I thought, you know what, I'm going to get her the hard copy book, the actual physical one, because I've only read the, you know, not the PDF. I'm going to get her the proper one, and we're going to sit down and read the book, because she also doesn't like books about feelings as well. She doesn't want to read a book that says, hey, it's okay to make mistakes and everything's okay. It's got to have a good story, and maybe she can reach those conclusions herself. But it is something like, even at the age of 5, that thing of, no, I've got to do it right, and it's got to be good straight away. And if it isn't, I failed, and that is, I'm going to throw myself on the ground and have a, you know, and cry. And because I'm a failure.
Right. Yeah. It is amazing how quickly we show our personalities, like how early in life we start to like show who we are and who we are going to turn out to be. But I still think that there's an opportunity, and hopefully with a book like this, where maybe she can relate to the character, because the book doesn't really hit you over the head with the message, you know, like there is a strong story. So hopefully she'll relate to Mila.
yes, I hope so. And a great twist. There's a twist in the story, which is, because I love, like I've written three novels and they all have twists. Cool. And yeah. I love a twist. Like if there's not a twist in a book, I feel like I haven't, you know, if I'm not surprised at some point in a book, I feel like there's something wrong with the book. And I was, of course. You can hear, because it's a picture book and I'm, you know, there's not a lot of 5 and 6 year olds that listen to this podcast, but I still don't want to spoil the twist. I don't want to ruin it, it, like all great twists, it was like, oh yeah, that's really obvious. It's nice. It's a great story.
I'll give you a hint. I won't ruin the twist for listeners, but pay attention to the shoes.
Oh, see, that's great. That's good.
Yeah, the shoes are a detail.
Yes, because kids love figuring stuff out and like, which is actually, I mean, that's one of the problems of being a kid magician is that kids, when they're an audience of a magic show, they want to figure it out and they want to show that they know something. They want to make it very clear that they haven't been fooled and bamboozled.
Right.
And when the magician is another kid, it's like, my 9-year-old who does a little magic, but came home and said, two of my friends did a magic show in class and the tricks weren't very good and everyone was so mean and I had to stand up and tell them that they were being a bad audience because I've instilled in them from a, you know, that you've got to be a good audience. And if you see how the trick works.
I think maybe you gave me an idea. I feel like maybe there should be a book about being a good audience member. That would be really, I think, helpful.
Yes. I have long felt that there should be a book, because you've obviously been to a lot of magic shows with magicians. Yes. You know, you've been to magic conventions and we are the worst audience in the world. We'll sit, you know, we'll have our arms crossed and if we see a move and we like it, we go, yeah, nice. Yeah, yeah. But we don't clap. We don't clap. We don't laugh unless it's to show we're in on the joke.
It takes a lot.
It's very hard to be a good audience. So there's that can be the sequel. There can definitely be. Yeah. Yeah. Great. The protagonist of your book is a girl. And I'm hyper aware of the fact that there historically have not been very many women in magic. I want more women and particularly young kids to do magic. Mm-hmm. Like I would like young girls to take up magic and to be able to do it in their own way and in their own style. And I think that's something I get from the book is like, you know, again, it's not hitting over the head, but like you have a girl who wants to be a magician and it's not treated as something unusual or strange or she's doing a boy thing. Aside from books like yours, how do we get more girls doing magic? What can we do?
Well, I do think that seeing examples and role models is really everything. Representation is everything. And when you turn on the TV or open up a book and you're seeing boys and men over and over again, that's just what the message that you absorb. And I do think that it has changed a lot in recent years, and Penn & Teller Fool Us, I think, has contributed a lot to increasing the representation of women in magic on television specifically. But as far as really reaching kids, I feel like you have to reach kids with the media that they consume that is meant for them. And picture books are a huge part of that. I've been asked, why did you write a book for such young children? Because really the book is for ages 3 to 8, maybe 9, maybe a little bit older. But and because usually kids, when they get into magic, are, you know, older, like 8, maybe 8 or 9. But I feel like in order to to normalize seeing girls in the role of a magician, you can't wait until they're 8 or 9 years old because they already have formed their view of the world by that age. And actually, I read this study in the Journal of Science where they offered different activities to boys, young boys, and girls. And they gave them the choice to choose an activity that you had to work really hard at and an activity that was for really smart kids. And the 5-year-old boys and the 5-year-old girls chose these activities in about equal numbers. But the six-year-old, by the time they were six, the girls were shying away from the activities that were dubbed for the really smart kids. And that pattern, the shift in these choices, held up as they aged as well. So the 6-year-olds, the 7-year-olds, and the 8-year-olds in the study made similar choices. And so we know that by the time a child is 6 years old, they already are forming pretty firm understandings of what is and is not available to their gender. And so a 5-year-old girl might be thinking, I'm going to be a magician. And a 6-year-old girl might be thinking, I'm going to be a magician's assistant. And so that's why it was really important to me to write this book, Hocus Pocus, Practice Focus, to really show young kids that girls and women are also magicians.
Yeah, it is a depressing thing to watch, and it often comes from their peers as well. Like it comes from, it's almost like an infection. You know, one child, you might get one boy learns at the age of 5 that there's, you know, this idea that, oh, there are boy things and girl things. Mm-hmm. And it then goes to school and, you know, kindergarten and repeats this idea. And the other kids go, oh, I've never thought about that. I better make some decisions. I'm currently having a very in-depth conversation with my 5-year-old at the moment about whether yogurt is for babies, because somebody once said yogurt is for babies, and now no yogurt's terrible. For me, it's for babies. And it's like, I eat yogurt, your mother eats yogurt, your older sibling eats yogurt, but nope, it's for babies because this one kid, mentioned. So with this book, it's beautifully illustrated, by the way. Who is the illustrator?
Yeah, her name's Srinidhi Srinivasan, and she lives in India. And I found her on social media, and she turned out to be incredibly talented and such a delight to work with. Yeah, we had a great back and forth as far as exchanging information and ideas. And I provided her with very specific instructions. And I ended up sending her a lot of YouTube videos and different magic references so that she could illustrate these tricks correctly. But she did a great job.
You mentioned YouTube. Who are the magicians you like to watch?
It's a great question.
Before you answer that, let me remind you that I believe you're partner is a magician.
You stole my answer.
Sorry.
My husband is Kosta Kinlat, and he is a magician, as you said. So, I have not gotten tired of going to his performances because everyone's reactions are always just so much fun. So, first and foremost, I would say Kosta. I just really love to watch people's reactions. I feel like there's nothing better. It's like, I think that is, you know, a primary reason why magicians decide to perform, because they love the reactions. And I feel like I get to enjoy the reactions without any of the stress of having to make the tricks work. So it's like a win-win for me. Just thinking about the magicians that I'm not related to, which performers I really enjoy. And I think I experienced magic shows as like, you know, 50% a layperson and 50% from a magician's perspective. And so I don't know, I really like the, you know, really entertaining ones. The shows that come to mind for me would be Mike Hammer. Have you heard of Mike Hammer in Vegas?
Yeah, he's in Las Vegas, right?
Yes, he's just fantastic. He's so funny, and you just laugh the whole time. And the best thing about his act is that he remembers everybody's names, and he calls back to them, and it's like you're like a real community as an audience, and he really makes you feel like we're all in this, and it's just, it's hilarious, and what the way he handles the people is just outstanding. So I would say Mike Hammer show, and then the other show, which is very different from Mike Hammer show, that comes to mind would be the Evisons, the Mentalist duo.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with them?
Yeah.
Yep. I could watch them all day. They're just amazing. Like, they just make magic look real.
It's that extraordinary ability to great magicians have to make you forget that you're watching a magic show, and you have to almost remind yourself that you're watching a piece of fiction. You mentioned that idea of community with an audience and that sort of idea of connection. Magic is definitely, it is an art form that doesn't exist without an audience. You can't do magic by yourself. And for kids, I know there are a lot of kids are drawn to magic as a, particularly maybe kids who might struggle socially, but they're drawn to magic as a way of connecting with their peers. And I think that's something you get in the book. First thing that she wants to do is, I've got this thing and I want to share it. Was that your experience as well?
Yeah, I loved performing for my friends, and at school and at camp, I have a definite memory of standing in the aisle of the lunchroom and attempting to levitate, which was like probably not the right environment for that. But yeah, I loved doing that and having something fun to share with my friends.
For you, obviously, as a children's author, are you drawn to that idea of finding ways to improve kids' lives?
Yeah, it's a great question, because this book, I feel like, checked so many boxes for my own personal fulfillment, because it's, you know, teaching this important lesson about persistence, and it's also about magic and encouraging kids to get into magic, and specifically girls and women. And I'm really proud of this book, but now I want to do follow-up books and additional ones. And so I've given a lot of thought to, okay, well, what kind of children's author am I? Is this just my magic book, and then I'm going to do other books on totally different subjects, or am I going to continue with it? And I don't know the answer to that question entirely, but I do think that the next books that I write, I would like to be in the same genre of relating to magic and encouraging kids, and especially girls, I should say, not specifically girls. I think there's a real opportunity there, because magic is so transformational for kids, and it teaches so many lessons. And I know that it's very cool these days to have these children's books with social emotional lessons. And I think magic is a way to teach a lot of these concepts without making the book so explicitly about them.
Preachy, kind of didactic books seem to sell very well. I don't know many kids that will bring out How to Talk About Your Feelings book as, oh, this is my favorite. And
Yeah, strong lessons, strong story, strong artwork. I feel like that's the recipe.
When was the last time you performed magic yourself? When was the last time you put on a was it the eighth grade or have you?
No, well, it was the last time for a very long time. And then I met Kostya, and when we started dating, it was a fantastical time. And we performed together on occasion. I mean, magic is his profession and career, and very much not my profession and career, and was never my profession. But we did have a lot of fun, where I would occasionally perform with him, and even when he proposed, we were doing a magic show together. So I have performed as an adult with Kostya, but it's been a few years. It was before we had kids. Our oldest is now 3 and a half, so not too long ago, but not too recently either.
Is the 3.5-year-old old enough to appreciate the book as you would like them to?
Yeah. When I first read it to her, she was riveted, and the way it held her attention really exceeded my expectations. And she was disappointed when the book was done. And then shortly afterwards, Kostya taught her how to jump a hairband across her fingers. And I'll never forget, she comes running across the house into the room that I was in and said, "Mommy, I can't believe it. I just learned my first magic trick."
Oh,
she's three. And like the awareness that she had that this was like some really special thing was just really awesome. And even more even more adorably when she would then practice this trick and it would inevitably not work. She would just talk to herself and say, "That's okay. I just need more practice." So she like already is getting the lesson and she's three.
I feel like I've left it too late with my five-year-old. It's all baked in.
There's still hope.
No. I'll just give up. I'll have a third one and try again. Just have a little cynical five-year-old moping around.
I have hope. I have hope that this book could help things.
So for the promotion of the book, do you have a trick that I'm not going to ask you to do a trick right now, but do you have something that you're going to prepare that you're going to, you know, if you need to go into libraries or schools and perform for the, you know, and read the book and maybe perform a trick yourself?
Yeah. Well, at the end of the book, there is one trick that Mila teaches.
Yeah.
And, that's the disappearing and reappearing toothpick. And so I do like the idea. I don't intend to go to schools and perform magic shows, but I do think that there is an opportunity to teach kids magic, simple tricks like that. And I also like the idea of, through the book, Mila being the one to teach her trick. And so I'm also thinking about, you know, subsequent books actually teaching more magic, because really there's one trick in the book and then an opportunity to learn another one on my website. But I do think that I'd like to teach some more magic.
I was talking to Matt Pritchard, who is a magician and he's a science educator. And he says with all of his shows, he likes to always have the "and now" moment at the end, right, where he's finished his show, but then he always wants to have this thing that what is the audience going to do next? It's almost like a sort of call to action. And that's what I felt reading the book, was that sort of thing of like, you don't close the book and go on with your day. You run and get a toothpick and make it disappear in front of the mirror. And it was a great choice of trick, because it's such a, it's easy to do and it looks great. It's like a little toothpick and it's literally.
Yeah, we'll give Kostya gets all the credit for selecting which trick that was going to be. And, we wanted it to be a trick that Mila is seen doing in the book. So you see her doing that specific trick. And, you know, we took all these photos of Kostya doing this trick and then sent the photos to Srinidhi in India so that she could illustrate them. And it was a collaboration.
Yes. Yeah. And you need a good, you know, you need a good illustrator to be able to actually draw pictures that both fit in with the story, but actually are useful for the reader to be able to tell.
Right.
Yeah. My last book was older, sort of middle grade fiction novel, you know, and it had magic tricks in it. And I had a lot of, those discussions about how do you teach magic without it feeling in a novel, in this case, without it feeling like you are sort of stopping the story and stopping the narrative to do this little technical thing, you know, that kind of pulls them out of the story. And it's a difficult thing to do.
It's tricky.
Yeah, yeah, very tricky. Yeah. And the book, I think, you bring those steps to life. Yeah. Beautifully in the book. So it's fantastic. So finally, where can people get a copy of Hocus Pocus Practice Focus? Where do we?
Yeah, you can, it's available on Amazon. If you would like a direct link, you can go to my website, which is amykimlat.com. And I'd also love to offer your listeners the opportunity to download a complimentary PDF of the book. And if they enjoy it, they can write a review, an honest review on Amazon, and perhaps also order a hard copy. And there's a special URL for that, and that's amykimlat.com/honest.
Oh, thank you so much. And I hope to talk to you again about your next book.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Thanks for having me.
This has been Scammapalooza. Don't forget to leave a review at iTunes. Seriously, do it.